Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming on a hot day. Hopefully it'll stay nice and cool in here. But the topic is a hot topic, so it might not stay so cool in here. Because people feel very strongly about this. If I could remind people, please switch off their phones. This is a very contemporary issue. Just yesterday in the news, I saw on Arad Sheva, Rav Osher Weiss, one of the very senior important poskim of our time, who was speaking at a European conference, came out very publicly, it's not the first time he's done that before, and said that from a halachic perspective, it's absolutely essential in his view, and in fairness, this is the view of almost all of the poskim, it's absolutely essential that people vaccinate their children. And he emphasized that and we'll see his own written tshuva a little bit later on. And as I said, that is the position of almost every posek, with a couple of notable exceptions, which we'll talk about as we go through the topic. And this is also the almost entirely unanimous opinion of the medical profession as well. It's not 99 out of 100 doctors that say this. It's 999 out of 1,000, etc., etc. However, there are voices which are very strong and fiercely held views. I've had this from my students. I saw this. If you just look at the Arad Sheva article that I mentioned, Rav Osher Weiss, yesterday, just look on the comments underneath. And now I know you can say that the people who comment on, you know, articles on the internet are a self-selecting crowd, and they're not always representative of anyone but their own view, and sometimes not even that. But you should see the vociferous comments that were received by what they call now the anti-vaxxers. People who feel very strongly that vaccinations are negative in some ways, that vaccinating children can harm them, can damage them. And you only need to go online and look at the kind of conversation that goes on. This is a viewpoint that we have to take seriously, not necessarily medically seriously, because we'll see soon the medical establishment is pretty clear, very clear. But we have to take it seriously because in practical terms, people are not vaccinating their children. Large numbers of people are not vaccinating their children, and this is especially true in the Orthodox community. And as I think people know, there have been a number of recent outbreaks of measles in Israel. A baby has died. There are people who have gone into comas because of this. It's a very serious disease. And in America as well, and many of the outbreaks in America have been in the Frum communities, in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg, in Monty, in Lakewood, and many of those outbreaks in America have been caused by people coming back from Israel. So this has taken on many different levels of seriousness, and I'd like to talk about all of that. It's a very important topic, and it quickly became apparent to me that I need two shiurim to deal with it. So this week and next week, please God, and I'll show you over the course of today what the kind of issues are that we're going to discuss. Now, according to almost every medical opinion, the recent outbreaks are a result of a failure of people to vaccinate, which has reduced what they call the herd immunity. We'll talk about what herd immunity is soon, but basically when you go below a certain number of people in society who are vaccinated against these diseases, then it becomes much more likely for there to be an outbreak. And the Orthodox world, as I said, has been particularly affected by this because we tend to hang out together and go to large gatherings, shuls and schools and dinners and all sorts of things like that, where lots of people who all know each other get together. This is a recipe for cross-contamination. It's not just, by the way, the Frum community. There was a very recorded measles outbreak in Disneyland a few years ago, because again, everyone gets together, they spend time together, and then they take it back. I've given here on page one, you can read most of the English yourself later, but I've given 10 reasons why, from my own understanding and research, this has become a problem now. And it wasn't a problem, let's say, 15, 20 years ago, but this is a problem now. And these reasons include the following. First of all, there's a growing concern in the general public that vaccinations can have serious side effects. Now, I'm not a doctor, and I have no intention of analyzing the medical evidence. Okay? I leave it for the doctors amongst you and your own medical advisors to do that. However, what we are going to do is look at the halachic implications of the medical evidence. So I'm not going to weigh up the medical evidence, but there's a general concern that people have in many places in the public that there are serious side effects to vaccinations. This was started really about 20 years ago when there was a study published in The Lancet by a doctor called Wakefield, Dr. Wakefield in England, where he suggested that there was a link between between the MMR vaccination and autism. This paper was later withdrawn by the Lancet, and he was shown to have produced fraudulent results, and he was being paid by lawyers who were working on behalf of parents with children with autism to try and produce evidence in this way. And there have been any number of articles in the Lancet since then stressing that there is no link between measles, the MMR injection, and autism. But this doesn't stop people saying that. And of course, people now go to the internet for their information rather than to medical professionals, and we'll look at how that works soon. Also, there have been real historic tragedies. People are nervous. Think of the thalidomide disaster, where large numbers of women were given an apparently harmless medication for morning sickness, and it resulted in horrendous deformities in thousands and thousands of babies. So people turn around and say, this can happen, and it did happen. Also, there's a tendency on social media to sensationalize, especially when it comes to celebrities. You can watch a video of one particular person, and you think that then applies to hundreds or thousands of people, in addition to which people are not very good at assessing risk. You can give people statistics, but they don't necessarily process them very well. You know, you think you could win the lottery? If you think you could win the lottery, then people think all sorts of things. And statistics sometimes don't talk to people because they have cognitive biases. And I brought you actually a link as to how cognitive biases work and how you tell people one thing, but they process it in a different way. Also, people are very familiar with the modern syndromes such as autism, severe allergies. It's been connected by some people with sudden infant death syndrome. Again, there's no medical evidence for any of this, but people know about those things. Very few people in the world under the age of, 60, can really remember serious outbreaks of these actual diseases. Measles epidemics, chickenpox epidemics, rubella. Just in terms of rubella, in pre-vaccinated United States, I brought you a note here, in the 1964-5, there were 12.5 million cases of German measles, of rubella in America. 11,000 fetuses were miscarried, died in utero or aborted. 20,000 infants who were infected survived to full term. 2,000 of them died shortly after birth. 12,000 were deaf. 3,500 were blind. And 1,800 suffered from permanent mental inability. This was a very serious business. Smallpox has killed more people in the world than any other disease, and probably all wars put together. People don't remember any of that anymore. I certainly don't remember that. I had one cousin that got polio, and she was okay, but walked with a brace for a while. But I'm sure people here do remember more severe outbreaks in the past, but people today have very little awareness of that. There's also a tendency in the world for people to believe conspiracy theories. We all see this, and for people to think that the medical establishment's in cahoots with the pharmaceutical industry, and it's all a big hoax, and they're putting this into our bodies, etc. People are certainly very skeptical these days. There's a growing willingness to accept non-traditional medical solutions to things. There's a negativity in certain orthodox circles to science generally. You know, scientists are seen as the enemy. Doctors are seen sometimes as the enemy, which we talked about before, how problematic that is, and that can lead people to make these kind of decisions as well. There have been negative attitudes amongst certain rabbinic leaders to vaccinations, not anti-vaccination itself, but certainly in favor of giving parents a choice. It's your choice whether to vaccinate. And of course, people like to have choices these days. Look at everything that's going on in America between the pro-government people and the pro-individual people, and there's a lot of stuff going on there. And of course, DAFCO feeds into this as well. A lot of people say, I have no choice. If my rabbi says I shouldn't vaccinate, then I don't vaccinate because I do what my rabbi says. And okay, it's a medical issue, but we talked about that, how Daf Torah spreads rabbinic authority to other things as well. So with that short introduction, what the topics that I want to look at are as follows over this week and next week. Number one, look at the bottom of the topics there, relevant halakhic questions. Is a person obligated or even permitted to vaccinate their child if there are potential side effects? How significant do the side effects need to be in order to be a halakhic problem? Is a person allowed not to vaccinate their child? What if that could be dangerous for the community at large? Meaning, if a person says, why should I vaccinate my child and give them any danger at all? If I don't vaccinate, it'll probably be fine for everybody. What will one difference make, one vaccination make as a difference to everybody else. Why should I put my child in danger in order to protect everybody else out there? That's a good halachic question, and we're going to address that halachic question. What types of risk does a person have to take in life? What is one obligated to avoid? What can one choose to take? What does one have to take? How do you weigh medical opinion in halacha? Over the page, should a person be compelled to vaccinate their children? Should their children be expelled or excluded from school if the parents refuse to vaccinate their children? What do schools have to do to make sure that the children are vaccinated? It's not uncommon for schools in America, Jewish schools, to send out a letter to parents and say, your child must be vaccinated before they come to school. Please confirm that they are. The parents then write back, say, I do not believe in vaccinating my children, and I have the right to choose not to. The school then writes back and says, well, I'm afraid we won't take your child. And the parents said, oh, yes, the child is actually vaccinated. That's not an uncommon series of events. And then the school has to get to the point of saying, well, we're going to need blood work on your children before we'll allow them into school. This is the point that we've got to in some places. So should the school, can the school exclude the child? And how does the secular law impact on this? In certain states in America, a person has a right to say, I have a religious objection to vaccination. Is it legitimate for a Jewish person to sign a declaration saying, under Judaism, vaccination is not allowed, and therefore I claim a religious exemption? Is that a legitimate statement, or is that just sheker? Okay, so we'll see. We'll have a look at all of that as we go through. Okay, let's look at page 2, please. I'm not going to read everything here. Many of you probably know it already. I've given you some background on smallpox and quite how serious that was and how many hundreds of millions of people have died over the centuries from smallpox. Also measles. I brought you some background here in number 2. I brought you from Wikipedia, but you can get this in many, many different places, how measles works and how many people died in the past from measles. There are also other diseases that can be caused through being infected by measles, and people are not always aware of that, but when small children especially are infected by measles, they may not even know they've been infected by measles, and other disorders can come out later in life, and I brought that in number 3. You can look at that SSPE, which is a neurological disorder that a number of people contract once they've been exposed to the measles bacteria, virus. It's bacteria or virus? It's a virus, right? Virus. And herd immunity I discussed in number 4 here, where the idea, that I'll just read number 4, individuals who are immune to a disease act as a barrier in the spread of the disease, slowing or preventing the transmission of disease to others. An individual's immunity can be acquired via natural infection or through artificial means, such as a vaccination. When a critical proportion of the population becomes immune, called herd immunity threshold, or herd immunity level, the disease may no longer persist in the population, ceasing to be endemic. And different diseases have different percentages as to how many people need to be vaccinated or immune in order for the disease not to take hold. And I brought these down at the bottom here as well. With measles, it's something in the realm of 92 to 95% that needs to be vaccinated in order for the disease not to reoccur. And of course, don't forget that there are many people who are not vaccinated and cannot be vaccinated. There are some people who were vaccinated, but the immunity doesn't work. There's a certain percentage of people for whom it doesn't work. There are certain people who are unable to receive the vaccination because they are immune suppressed, or they're young children who have not yet had the vaccination, etc. So there will be people in society, and once the other members of society stop the vaccination process, you quite quickly fall below this level, especially in a closed Orthodox community where everybody's with everybody, and you end up without this immunity, and hence the doctors are saying that's why these outbreaks are now happening. Now, let's go on to some of the sources with that introduction. The history of vaccination is fascinating, and there are already sources in the 1700s that deal with it. I brought you here in number 6 a little piece from the BBC where it says, people struggle to find ways to battle with smallpox. Variolation was a process developed in the 10th century in China and India, involving, excuse me for this, it's a bit graphic, taking pus from the pox of someone suffering from smallpox and inoculating healthy people with it. Usually a mild case of smallpox developed, giving lifelong immunity afterwards. But there was a risk of death from this. But in a world where smallpox was rife, the odds made it worthwhile. About 0.5 to 2% of people died from the variolation. This was prior to the vaccination, compared with 20 to 30% after natural smallpox. You had a very strong chance of having a nasty end if you actually caught smallpox. A major disadvantage of the practice was that very later people could pass on the smallpox to others. The real breakthrough in fighting the virus came in 1796 when Edward Jenner in England carried out the famous experiment that he did. He inserted pus extracted from a cowpox pustule on the hand of a milkmaid. Of course, cowpox is connected to smallpox genetically, but it only affects cattle mostly and milkmaids who would be milking the cattle. So he took some pus from the hand of a milkmaid who had cowpox, put it into an incision on the arm of an 8-year-old boy, James Phipps. Jenner was testing his theory, drawn from the folklore of the countryside, that milkmaids who suffered from the mild disease of cowpox never contracted smallpox. Jenner proved conclusively that contracting cowpox provided immunity against smallpox as well. He was quick to realize the enormous potential of the vaccination. In 1801, he wrote, "It now becomes too manifest to admit of controversy that the annihilation of the smallpox, the most dreadful scourge of the human species, must be the final result of this practice." He had great hopes, and indeed his hopes were realized. By the 1970s, 80s, smallpox was eradicated from the world. There is now no smallpox anywhere in the world apart from in two laboratory samples, one in America and one somewhere else, which I hope that they're keeping very secure. Okay? But otherwise, there is no smallpox in the world. I brought you a picture of a gravestone here of a non-Jewish person, I believe. It says, if you can read it, this was before the vaccination, in memory of Peleg, son of Thomas and Mary Conklin, who died by the smallpox inoculation. January 27, 1788. But that's before the vaccine. That's when they were taking actual smallpox from infected people and putting it into the bodies of non-infected people in the hope that that would help. So the earliest published Torah material was in 1785, again before the vaccination, and someone who we've never heard of called Alexander ben Shlomo Nanish of Hamburg basically had lost two of his children to smallpox, and he published a work, Ali Trufa, in London, about the halachic permissibility of inoculation. And again, inoculation in those days was not the vaccination we have today. It was something much more dangerous, but he said, listen, if you stand a 0.5% chance of catching smallpox from the inoculation, but if the disease breaks out, then you stand a 30% chance of dying, then you should go for the former. The problem is, though, I might never be in an epidemic. You're giving me an inoculation and definitely infecting me with something, as opposed to a higher chance of possibly being infected with something. And therein lies the fascinating halachic question. Let's have a look at the first main source, and one of the major sources on this in the Tiferet Yisrael. The Tiferet Yisrael was written by Rav Yisrael Lifshitz in the early 1800s, and it's a fascinating parish, and he deals with this issue very very clearly. Look at number 7. It's based on the Mishnah in Yuma that deals with Pikuach Nefesh. Look at the Mishnah number 7. Mishnah Nafla Alav Mapolet. Someone who a building falls upon them. A mapolet is a building, don't get it confused with a makolet, it's not the same thing at all. Okay? A mapolet falls upon a person. Sofik husham, sofik enosham. I don't know if the person was even there or not. We're dealing Shabbos afternoon, God forbid there's been a building collapse. Maybe there was someone in there, maybe they weren't, we're not sure. Sofik chai, sofik meis. Maybe even if there was someone in there, maybe they're already dead, there's no way they could survive, in which case you can't break Shabbos, but maybe they're alive. Sofik over Kachavim, Sofik Israel. Maybe they're Jewish, maybe they're not Jewish, and I'm not getting into now the halacha lemaita of how we break Shabbos for Jews and for non-Jews. We do, in practical terms, break Shabbos to save all human lives, but the mechanism of that halachically is a bit different. But with all of those multiple sveikot, maybe there's someone there, and maybe there isn't, and maybe they're dead, and maybe they're alive, and maybe they're Jewish, and maybe they're not. Fakshim alav etagam. We break Shabbos in any way we need to try and ascertain whether we can save the person, meaning we do not follow the majority. In this case, with the Kuach Nefesh, we don't go after the majority probability. There's a very tiny chance that there's someone alive in there. Doesn't matter. We take any option we can, and we break Shabbos. Says the Tiferet Yisrael number 8. Umizeh nirili hetel asov inoculation. From this, I think you can do inoculation shel pocken, smallpox. This was after the vaccine was invented by Jenner, although you should know the vaccine was very unpopular at the beginning, because people again turned around and said, how can you infect people on purpose with smallpox? People were very nervous about it, because they were trying to avoid it, not get it. And he was telling them, if I give it to you, you'll be better off in the long run. And that's very counterintuitive to many people. So he said, here I think you can do the inoculation against smallpox. Even if one in a thousand will die from the inoculation, but if they end up it being in an epidemic of pocket, has to be in of natural smallpox, it's much more dangerous than that. If they do. Therefore, I think he says, you're allowed to put yourself in a smaller probability danger to save yourself from a larger possible danger. So you can take the proactive risk, which is small, to avoid the possible risk, which is large. He says, I can bring you a proof from the Beit Yosef. But Tur Choshen Mishpat, and he quotes the Beit Yosef in the Choshen Mishpat, so it says, Tachav Havav, B'Shem HaYerushalmi, who quotes the Yerushalmi, Dechayev Adam Lachachnet Et Asma, B'Tofik Sakonik, Dela Hasel Chaverim, Zavadah, and Sakona. And the Yerushalmi says, that if there's someone drowning in the river, and I could jump in and save them, and it looks like they're in trouble, and I can swim okay, but it's going to be dangerous for me. You never know. If I jump in, maybe it's more dangerous than I thought. Maybe there's undercurrents. Maybe the person will panic and drag me down. Every now and then, people who jump in to save people themselves get killed in trying to save them. Says the Yerushalmi, I can still do that. Maybe even I should do that. Maybe even I must do that. And I'm not getting into all the halachas as they brought in the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, of whether it's a chiyuv, but it's certainly permitted according to the Yerushalmi and the halacha. The Hari Baroya Chaveru, if you see your friend, he says, Toivea Benar, drowning in the river, Einu Mukhlet. It's not absolutely clear that he's going to drown. Im lo yatzilhu, if you don't save him. Could he maybe be saved by someone else? He might grab a piece of wood. Someone else might dive him. You don't know he's going to die. Ve'im lahatzil chaveru yesh chiyuv lahachnis et asmo b'sofik sakana. If to save somebody else's life, you have to put yourself into a small but real danger. Mikol shekein sheyeh reshus v'yad lahatzil et guf atzmo. All the more so you have to save your own life by doing the same thing. So he says, if you have to jump in the river to save your friend, even though that endangers your life, you certainly have to take an inoculation and endanger your own life a little bit in order to potentially save your own life from a much greater risk. That Tiferes Yisrael is an important beginning source. Yes. The Tiferes Yisrael was early 1800s. I don't know the exact year of the, but you'll see now in number 9, he's post Edward Jenner, because I brought you this fascinating second quote from the Tiferes Yisrael, where he goes through all his favorite non-Jews in history. It's a really interesting source. The Tiferes Yisrael was very broad, had a broad range of understanding and secular studies too. And on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which says that how fortunate is a human being to be created with Tzelem Elokim, and it's talking about non-Jews and Jews, so here jumps in the Tiferes Yisrael and says the following, number 9. This has got nothing to do directly with vaccination, but I couldn't resist bringing it because it's just so interesting. We see so many of the Hasidim of the non-Jewish world, apart from the fact that they understand Yosef Breishis, they're scientists, they know how to interact in the world. And many of them are religious, and they believe in the Torah of Hashem. They may be Christians, but they believe in the Torah as being from God. Look at all the amazing things they do for Jewish people too. And there are a few of them, he says, I want to mention, who have done amazing things for the world. And who's the first? Kehachosid Yana. Jana? The Chosid Yana? Shehimsi ha Pocken Impfung. I think that's what it says. Pocken Impfung is an injection in Yiddish against German against pox. Sha'al yada nitzulim kama rivavot b'nei adam b'choyle u'mimita u'mimumim. How many thousands and tens of thousands of people have been protected from death, illness, and disfiguration from not having a disfigurement, is the word maybe, from not having caught the smallpox? And who's his second candidate? Who's this next fellow? Drake? Sir Francis Drake. Sir Francis Drake? Shehibo Hakat Huffle, La Europa. Who brought potatoes to Europe? Shema Akiv Kamapam, Shema Akiv Kamamin Haram. Think how many, and by the way, this is a serious point, the potato is credited with having been fueled in many ways the Industrial Revolution, that now that there are thousands of people who otherwise would have died of starvation, and now don't die because they eat potatoes. Hariah, look at the potato famine in Ireland, and see what happened to Ireland when the potatoes failed. What's that? Well, he says to Francis Drake, so let's not take it away from Sir Francis Drake. A little bit of British pride going on there, maybe. He says, Sir Francis Drake is my second candidate. Who's his third? Sir Gutenberg. Gutenberg Shahim Tietat Fuss, who invented the printing press. The Kamenehem Shaloy Nisham Mutlami Olam Azeh. And many of them never got recognition in this world. Kachosid Reuchlin, like Johann Reuchlin, Shehara Lamut, he risked his own death, Lamut Nashor, the Hatzil Srefa Kashatin. If you know this episode, in the 1500s there was an apostate called Pfefferkorn, Johannes Pfefferkorn, who converted from Judaism to Catholicism and became a Sonei Israel of the highest order and tried to persuade the Emperor Maximilian to burn thousands of Shatim, like they had previously in France in generations before that. And Reuchlin, who was a Catholic, but who was a humanist, intervened very strongly to try and prevent the burning of the Sforim and succeeded to a large degree. So Nitzavu Mehakaiser Maximilian, Bishnat Reish Samachet, in the 1500s there, Alidei HaSafet Hamum of Pfefferkorn, Shin Tet. So I have to look at what Shin Tet means. Shin Tet means Shchik Tamya, may his bones rot, Pfefferkorn, okay? Imakorim, Keshashel Rashaim Shalom, with his awful band of terrible priests, look what he says at the end. Can you think for a second, Shekola Masim Hagidolim Ha'ele, all these amazing things that these non-Jews have done. Lo Yishulmu La'olam Hava La'acham Pazot. Do you think these people are not getting an amazing reward in Olam Hava? Think of the chelik in Olam Hava that these non-Jews have. Chas v'shalom, he says, God forbid, they shouldn't be rewarded in Olam Hava enormously. V'hari HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ein Mekapeach Shechar Shel Kopri. God never withholds any reward from any, and I think this is just a lovely piece where he goes through his favorite non-Jews in history, and Edward Jenner is one of them. Okay, Jenner is one of them, and that's, if you like, an interesting introduction. Let's look at the point that this first Israel makes, which is, to what extent do you have an obligation to protect your health, and what risks do we have to take in order to do that? So look at number 10. Let's get into health protection, and we'll see a certain structure here which I think is going to be very helpful before we go on next week to look at some relevant issues in terms of schools and excluding children, etc. Gemara in Shabbat, number 10. Amalei Rav Huna l'Rabba Brei. Rav Huna says to his son, Rabba, my time aloi shchichas kamei the Rav Chisda. Why don't you go to shir anymore? Why don't you go to Rav Chisda? He's such a good shir. You don't go anymore. The Mechabit in Shmaiseh is such a harif, he's so sharp. Why aren't you going to the shir? So what did his son say to him? Amalei, so he said to his father, my eitzel legabei, why should I go to that shir? Dikiyazin legabei, mostly b'milad alma. Whenever I go there, he talks about like mundane things. Milad alma, just boring things. Amalei, this is what he said to me when I went to a shir once. Man da'ayla beitakise, if somebody goes to the bathroom, they shouldn't quickly sit down in the bathroom and do everything in a hurry. And they shouldn't force themselves in the bathroom, because there's a way to use the bathroom which is healthy, and there's a way to use the bathroom which is bad for your health. So why should I go to shir and hear that mishigas? I want to hear about something, you know, more shy. So Amaleita, his dad says to him, who atik b'chayi gibrisi? He's telling you how to have good health. That I'm a bit of the alma, and you call that mundane nonsense? Or not nonsense, but mundane? Kol shekein zil legabe, all the more so you should go to him. This is very important. You don't just have to learn about hilchos mukta and other things. You have to learn how to be a healthy person. Go to the shir. I want you to go to that shir, to his son, because talking about health is an important thing. Very interesting source. And we get that from a number of places in the Chumash too. The Bava Kama here, in Bava Kama Chazal say, Rabbi Nosson Omer, Minay Shaloi Yigdal Adam Kelev Ra Batoich Beito. How do we know you're not allowed to have a nasty dog in your house? But Av Yamoy Sulam Ru'ua, and don't go climbing up a shaky ladder. Batoich Beito. And you can't even have a shaky ladder in your house, in case somebody climbs up the ladder and falls off the ladder. Talmud Lomer, he quotes a pasuk, Loisasim Damim Beveitecha. Don't have blood on your home. A negative mitzvah. You may not have things in your home, it says the Gemara, which are intrinsically dangerous. A dangerous dog. A shaky ladder. It's a negative mitzvah, and we'll see soon how the Rambam presents that. But then there's another more positive application of this in number 12. In the Gemara, in the Chumash in Devarim, it says, "Raki shama lechal shmo nashcha ma'oid." Be very careful. Shmor nashcha ma'oid. Look after your soul very well. Now this is talking about hashkafa, your neshama. Maybe you'll forget what you saw at Sinai. You'll teach to your children, to your grandchildren. When you stood at Sinai, I'll teach them everything Hashem says. You'll have to do. I'm not getting into that because that's not the point. It's talking about learning Torah and remembering the Hashkafas of Sinai, but then it says, "V'nishmatem ma'ayv le'nafshoseichem." Look very carefully after your nefesh, ki lo ra'itim kol tmona. You didn't see any image there, etc. Now, the klip shak in the psukim is talking about learning Torah. Don't forget. Be very careful. Look after yourselves because people might get the wrong impression. But Chazal, again, understood that that was not just talking about anashamas, but our bodies as well. Look at number 13. There was one chassid who was davening in the road, presumably the chassid, he's davening a good long Shmona Esrei. And a non-Jewish officer came along, someone in the government, and he wished him shalom to this Jew, and he didn't answer back. Could not, he's davening Shmona Esrei. So the guy, the officer, policeman, waited till he'd finished his tefillah. And then after he finished, he said to him, "Reka, you good for nothing. Because of the Torah, doesn't it say in your Torah, Raki shami lachal shmo nashacha? Doesn't it say you have to look after yourself? And then it says, v'nishmatim ma'od l'nashoseichem. You have to really look after yourself. When I said hello, why didn't you say hello to me back? If I cut your head off from your shoulders, besides with a sword, so who would complain? I have every right to chop your head off your body. Why didn't you answer?" And of course he gives him an answer, and he persuades him that I was davening mincha, and that they'll give me a hard time, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, when I used to be a lawyer, I sometimes had some awkward situations davening mincha. I never had this, I'm going to tell you. But, you know, when people come in, and they give, start speaking to you, and there was always this question when back in the old days when there were phone boxes, whether you should go in the phone booth and stand on the phone and daven mincha in the phone booth, and there's a guy outside, that's what's going on, why is this guy shaking up and down, and who's he calling? I never knew which number to dial when I was davening mincha. I tried 613, 613, 613. The truth is that's the area code for Ottawa, so if you ever dial, that's who you're going to get through to. But that's not the point. The point is that the Torah says that Chazal understand that v'nishmatem ma'oy v'nashoseichem is talking about looking after your health, not just your neshama. That's very clear. And in fact, there are three levels of protection of one's health. And I want to give you the structure. I saw this. It's beautifully presented. There's a very nice shir on Wayu Torah by Rav Aryeh Leibovitz, where he presents the structure. I think he comes ultimately from Rav Herschel Schechter as well, but I want to present it to you here. There's three kinds of danger. Type one is imminent present danger to life and limb. And then there is a Torah obligation to act now to protect yourself. There's an imminent danger. Type two is where there's a low level risk, but it's significant. And over the society as a whole, it could be dangerous for a significant number of people. And there Chazal came in and said, even though there's no Torah obligation to act now, we are going to make a list of things that we consider dangerous, and therefore don't do these things. Even though there's a low risk for you, once you work that risk out over society, it's serious enough. And then the third category are things which are much longer term potential risk. Where there's not even a mitzvah, there's not a chiyuv, but there's a positive sort of behavior, hanhaga, to act in a way which will protect your long-term health. And I'll give you examples of these as we go through, and I want you to be thinking, where does vaccination fit into all of this? Because we're going to see that. Yes, Evan?
Are you going to include
genetic
things like we have in the Jewish religion?
Yes, we are actually going to see a source on that in a minute. Excellent. Because one of the sources is Rav Moshe Feinstein talking about genetic testing. Yes?
Smoking
We're going to talk about smoking soon. We're going to get all of those things. We're going to see soon. Look at number 14. Says the Rambam, this is the first category, imminent present danger. Says the Rambam, Echad Hagag, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about a roof. Now, of course, here is the mitzvah is marker, to put a fence around the roof. And by the way, how high does a drop need to be before there is a Torah mitzvah of putting the fence around? 10 tefachim. Now, 10 tefachim is, I don't know, what about 30, 40 centimeters, something like that. So you see, it's not even that high. It's high enough that someone, God forbid, could kill themselves by not realizing and walking off it, but it's more likely that they'll be injured, but even so, that's high enough to be a serious present danger. Echad hagag, echad kol davar sheyesh bo sakana, barui shekashel bo adam. It's possible that a person might die. V'yamut kagayin shehayta lo ba'er, you have a well in your property, or bore, or a ditch, v'chaseroi in your yard. Bein sheyesh behem mayim, bein she'ein behem mayim. I don't, it doesn't matter whether there's water in there or not water in there. You have a big hole in the middle of your yard. Someone's going to walk in, fall down a hole. Chayv la'asot behem chuliyah. You have to make a little fence there. Gevoah sar tzvachim, 10 tzvachim high. Or la'asot le'kizui, or you have to at least put a cover on it. Kidei shelo yipol ba'adam v'yamut. You have to do that on a Torah level. V'chein kol michshel sheyesh bo sakanat nefashot. So to anywhere there is a danger to life, mitzvat ase lahasiro lishamer mimenu liyizav v'davi yafa yafa. Not just that you did a negative mitzvah if you failed to cover the hole, but there is a positive mitzvah to take active steps to cover the hole, to build a fence. Yafa yafa shenema yishame b'lecha v'shmona shecha. V'im loy hisir, and if you don't take away the danger, v'hiniach ha-michsholot ha-mivim l'day sakana, and you leave these dangers in your property, v'tel mitzvah tasei, v'avar aloy tasim damibu. So you've broken a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah. Okay, what is that talking about, as I said? Clear, present risk to life. Now you're going to tell me, but everything is a risk to life. You know, just getting in the car, driving up, carrying yourself, you're risking your life. Just getting out of bed in the morning, you're risking your life. You might slip in the bathroom. Anyone can tell you any number of tales of people, God forbid, did this, did that, just by you staying in bed. You're risking getting an embolism or there being an earthquake and you're in bed, the worst place to be. Everything in life is risky. And we'll see that in a minute. There are levels and other levels. But this is talking about something like a roof without a fence, a pool. You live in LA. I mean, you don't have to live in LA to have a swimming pool, but it helps. Okay? A pool without a fence around it. You've got kids playing by the pool. You know, sometimes in Israel these things tend to be a little bit different in the way that people see them, in the sense that there are kids doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Just look around the streets and see the kind of wood that the kids are dragging around right now to make these incredibly dangerous bonfires. Okay, good shaila how that fits with this halacha, okay? But this is a clear obligation, a mitzvah assay and mitzvah lois assay, to remove those dangers. Let's go on to page 5. What's the next level down? I'm sure people would agree vaccination doesn't fit into that category. It's not that there is an immediate epidemic happening now, but vaccination is a potential risk in the future. But what's the second category? Says the Rambam, he goes on to say in 15, Harbis varim asru chachamim. There are many other things that the rabbis prohibited. Mipnei sheyesh behem sakana nefashot. They're also life-threatening, but not immediately and not high risk. V'chala oibar alehim v'amar, anyone who says, Harini Mesakein, that's me. I'll put myself in danger. It's none of your business. I'll do what I like. Why are you getting involved in my life? I'm okay with this risk. Or Eneni Makpid Akach, or someone says, I don't bother about those things. I'm not worried. Makinot Makas Maradus. Then we give him Makas Maradus, which is the rabbinic lashes, if you like, because they've broken a rabbinic mitzvah. What kind of things are these? The Eluhain. Look in the next line. Loyan, and there's a whole long list. Don't put your mouth on the bottom of a pipe of water and drink, unless you know what's coming out of the pipe. Anything could come down the pipe, a dead bird, a snail. How do you know? Okay, fine, if it's a drinking fountain, nothing is going to come out. Well, usually nothing comes out at all. But if something comes out, yeah, it's going to be clean water, okay? But don't just put your mouth to a pipe. Lo yishte balayla. Minanaros, don't take a drink from a river at night. Umina agamim, or from a lake. Shema yivloa aluka. Maybe you'll swallow a snail. Or a leech. But who ain't a right, you won't see it. It could be dangerous. Lo yishte mayim mugulim. Don't drink water which is uncovered. Left uncovered out in the open. Shema shatim ehem nachash. Maybe a snake drank from it. Ukiyotzibo on anything like that, bezochleafar, for the creeps on the ground. But you say you'll drink it and there'll be venom in it for Yarmouth and you'll die. Now, I'm not getting into a discussion of why we're not particular about that today. We talked about that once, about how halacha changes over time, and now the Tosfos says there are no snakes, and therefore that's not relevant. But in principle, in a place where there are snakes around, you can't drink. Now, how likely is it, if you take a drink of water that's been lying on a chair or a desk, that a snake has come, crawled up the leg, gone into the water, taken a sip, left some venom, and crawled out again? How likely is that? It's not that likely. It's not like everywhere you go there are snakes putting venom into everything. And yet, Chazal said, even with a lower level risk, let's say it's 1 in 1,000. Okay, but if there's 10,000 people in town, that's 10 people who are going to die. So it's not imminent and immediate danger, but it's significant enough to be worthy of rabbinic prohibition. Yes, sir?
If the number of people who could be affected by the danger are relevant,
I think so, because all of these dangers are dangers that affect society. We'll talk in a minute about individuals who do weird things. There are individuals who do weird things, but I think Chazal, when they made a gezeira, these are all things which affect a mass of people. That's the way I understand it. And the Ramah paskens that it's not just these things, but it's others as well. Look at number 16. Here's the Shulchan Aruch. Sarik lizeh. He adds other things here. The Shulchan Aruch says, Sarik lizeh milisen maot bepiv. Don't put money in your mouth. I remember my dad always used to tell me this when I was a kid. Never put money in your mouth. And I don't think he read it in the Shulchan Aruch, but he knew that it was wrong. And by the way, money is filthy. If you want, you can see a footnote. You might not want to read it. You might wish you hadn't when you have, okay? About exactly what's sitting on our money when you touch it. Certainly there's a Shulchan Aruch. Don't put it in your mouth. Maybe there's dried out spittle. People who've got leprosy. You don't know what you're touching, and just to put a line from the footnote here, it says paper money can reportedly transport a live flu virus for up to 17 days. Okay? There's all sorts on our mind. There's cocaine, there's this, yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going on. Says the Ramah, look, go on please, at the first line, number 16, V'chein yizahar, so too you must be careful, mikol dvarim hemevim yidei sakana. Now, he's not talking about Category 1. He's talking about Category 2. Anything like this, which has significant but low-risk possibilities of danger, ki sakanta chamirim isura, because there's a principle in halacha that we take sakana more seriously, more strictly than even issa. We see this, for example, in the interesting prohibition of eating fish and meat together. Chazal say you shouldn't eat fish and meat together, not because it's osa. What's osa? Fish is para, meat is fleshy, so you can eat them together. But because it tastes dangerous, exactly what the danger is, whether we feel that it is dangerous, I'm not getting into now. But because it's classified as a sakana, the halacha treats it more strictly than an isur. For example, if you drop milk into your chicken soup, as long as it's bottled with shishim, you're good to go. If you put fish into your meat, then it may be that bittle b'shishim does not work. Why? Because sakanta chamira mi'isur. And there's always the perennial discussion about Worcestershire sauce, which I always used to call Worcester sauce, but have then been informed that actually that's incorrect. And the English say it wrong, and the Americans say it right. Can there be such a thing? Apparently so. That it's Worcestershire sauce, apparently. And Liam Perrins tried to educate people, but it never catches on in England. Whatever. Worcestershire sauce has a small amount of fish in it. So can you put it on your meat or not? Or do we say, Sakanta chamira mi'isura? So you have to be more careful with dangers than with isurim, with prohibitions. Therefore, don't go to anywhere dangerous. Don't walk under a wall that looks as though it's going to fall in. Or don't walk alone at night. Meaning, walking alone at night is not an absolute clear image. It's not like walking by a roof with no fence on. But who walks alone at night in a place where they could be attacked? The chayin also nishdod mayim min hanaros b'layla, so too not to drink from rivers at night, etc. But I kato shi'esh lebrach min ha'ir k'shadeva v'ir. Get out of a town if plague comes to town, he says. Get out. V'yesh le'tzeg min ha'ir b'tchilach ha'deva. And get out at the beginning of the plague. And he knew this because there was plague in Krakow, and he lost family members to plague. I believe he lost his wife to plague. Okay, so the Ramon knew this. When plague comes to town, you get out quickly. All of this is because of danger. If you're careful, you have to avoid these. You can't rely on a miracle. You can't do this. You've got to sit around and say, oh, God will protect me. I have bitachon. Nope, that's the wrong answer. Many poskim will say, well, you hear from here, you see clearly that you have to vaccinate. If you have to run out of a town when a plague comes, then certainly you have to avoid the plague before it comes. Although it's not entirely straightforward, I think most people would put smoking into that category. I mean, smoking is not something that's going to kill you today, but it's something that's now been very clearly proven to be extremely damaging to health. And every cigarette takes another 5 minutes off your life, etc., etc., etc. And therefore, I think most poskim would put smoking in this category. Now, interestingly, we're going to see in a second, Rav Moshe Feinstein put smoking in the third category. But that was in 1981. And all his family have said that if Rav Moshe would be aware of the medical data today, there's no way he would categorize it in the third category, he'd put it in the second. And we'll see the third category now. So again, just to review. The first category is clear and present absolute danger happening right now. Torah mitzvah to avoid it. The second category is a potential low-risk but significant thing over society as a whole, like the ones we talked about, drinking the uncovered water. What's the third category? Look at number 17. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, Hoyel ve'ayot haguf bari v'shalom midarch Hashem. Since having a healthy body is also a religious imperative, it's one of the ways of connecting with God. Because you can't understand God, you can't connect with God, you can't learn Torah when you're sick. Being ill will prevent you from growing spiritually. Therefore, you have an obligation to try and avoid things which are bad for your body. This is not a chiyuv, it's a hanhaga. You have to conduct yourself, you have to do things which are healthy. And he gives you some examples. Never eat unless you're hungry. No snacking, I'm afraid, according to the Rambam. Only eat when you're hungry. Don't only drink when you're thirsty. Don't even wait a second. If you need the bathroom, go to the bathroom. And he has an entire perek of health advice, which of course some people follow, and there have been books written about the Rambam's diet and the Rambam's health regime, etc. But all of these things, you know, not eating too much fatty food, and a donut won't kill you, but 50 donuts a day will kill you, eventually, okay? Eating too much sugar, eating too much salt, whatever is the current medical advice. And by the way, that's very hard to put your finger on. I listened to something on the radio as I was driving last night, where someone came along and said in the 1970s, the medical advice was people eat too much fat, and that's why there's a heart disease problem in the world. And therefore everyone went to skimmed milk. Remember, everyone stops eating butter, stops eating eggs, and there's not apparently a shred of evidence, said this doctor, that fat does anything of the kind. Okay? I'm not a doctor, I make no comment. There are other theories, is it sugar, is it this, is it that? But whatever we think it is, in the long term, we should be careful about. Yes?
How do you use this to change halacha? Because you say, then we thought it was bad, now
good.
We know it's
good, because we're going to see next week, how do you weigh medical opinion? The doctors say this thing this week, and this thing next week.
You mentioned before, having the fish with the meat.
Right.
As far as I know.
Yeah, but that is already in the Gemara that says it's prohibited. So if the doctors say it's okay, then I'm not going to listen to the doctors. But where the doctors tell me not to eat too much sugar...
But the Gemara says it was prohibited presumably because
Maybe the Rambam has what to say in the Magen Avraham. I'm not getting into that now. We could have a whole shiur on fish and meat. In fact, maybe we should. But it's going to take us off topic.
Okay.
Because fish and meat, and exactly when the Gemara says things that don't sound right, because it says this is dangerous, not dangerous, how do we relate to it? Not for now. But it's a good question, which we have talked about a little bit. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, which I'm going to go quickly pick a couple of words out from, where he explains what this third category is. He says this, you can look at it in your own time in number 18, he's talking about im yesh itso b'ishun cigariot. Is it prohibited to smoke cigarettes? And as I said before, he, in 1981, puts them into this low-level category. He said it's not good for you, and you really shouldn't do it, but it's like eating too many donuts. Again, I think Rav Moshe clearly, everyone says, wouldn't say that today, but the point he's making is, it's the kind of thing that most people do, and they're okay with it, but some people come a cropper later on. And on this he says, if you look at the last five lines, this will be a segue, or the last five words rather, segue into the next the next part. Ubechashash kazeh, on problems, low-level problems like this, eating too much sugar, amrinam, we say, shomer pasayim hashef. God protects the foolish. So get this clear, and then we'll look at shomer pasayim hashem now. On the first and second category, you can't say shomer pasayim hashem. You can't say, I'll drink the water from the pipe and I don't care, God will look after me. No, Chazal said, this is actually dangerous. In a certain number of cases, you can't do it. But in this third category, you can. What does that mean? What is shomer pasayim hashem? And what are the kind of risks that we are allowed to take and maybe even obliged to take? Because you have to take risks. There is no living without risk taking. So let's go on to page number 6, and I'm going to show you hopefully how this works. We'll do most of it today, maybe pick up a little bit next time. There are a number of sugyas in the Gemara that deal with shomer pasayim hashem. This third level where you're allowed to take risks because life is risky. One of them is the issue of birth control. Contraception. Look in number 90. Says the Gemara in Nida. Gimel nashim asham shreis b'mayich. There are three women who, some understand, must use birth control. Other may understand, may use birth control. Ketana mu'uberet u'menika. A very small woman, obviously who's married and is potentially going to have a child, but she may be very young. Don't forget, women used to marry very, very young. If anyone has Moroccan grandmothers or one of them, quite often married at 12, 13, 14. A very small built person, mu'uberet, a pregnant woman who's already pregnant, should be using birth control. Umenika, and a nursing mother. What's the problem? Why is it dangerous in some way for these people to potentially get pregnant? So a very small woman, Katana, is a Shema Titaber Betamot. Obviously, maybe she might get pregnant, and she's not capable physically yet of bearing a child, and it'll be dangerous for her. What's the problem for a pregnant woman to get pregnant? Can a pregnant woman become pregnant again? Yes, actually she can. It's extremely rare. It's called superpotation, and it's where a woman ovulates a month or two, potentially even three, after she's already pregnant. Now that shouldn't happen because the hormonal system will stop that happening in almost every case, but it can happen. And if this woman then ovulates the next month or the month after, she could fertilize another embryo, and then there are two babies, and they're not twins. They're a month or two or three apart. This can happen, has happened, and according to the Gemara, got to be careful. And also a menika, that's easy. If a woman is nursing, what's going to happen if she gets pregnant? And she could easily get pregnant. The milk dries, and the first baby has nothing to eat, and then you're in trouble. Divrei Rebbe Meir. This is Rebbe Meir's concern, his view, because Rebbe Meir is choshish for the miyot. He's always concerned for the possible, even if unlikely, outcome. The Chachamim Omrim, the rabbi said, no, Echad Zo, the Echad Zo, all these women can have normal marital relations. They don't have to worry. They'll be okay. Minas shamayim yirachma. God will look after them. Shomer pasayim hashem. Because it says shemar shomer pasayim hashem. So God looks after the foolish. Meaning, there's nothing specifically wrong with these people. It's not like there's a woman who has an actual medical complaint. If a woman has a specific medical problem and the doctors say, you may not get pregnant, it's dangerous for you, then she can't get pregnant. She must use birth control. Every posik will say that, if there's a real health danger. But these women are normal, healthy women. There's just an element of risk in having a child. Well, bokehah, everyone has an element of risk in having a child. It would be much safer for women not to have children at all. Much safer for our sanity as well, in other areas, psychologically, but that's a different question. But more rewarding in the long term, obviously, to have them, please God. But certainly health-wise, the women who live longest are the women who never have children. So why should anyone have children? It's a danger. Shemesh Hashem Hashem. Now, how are we going to define this? There are a number of different ways that the Meforshim define this. Some define it as to the likelihood of risk. Says Rav Chaim Ozig Grzinski, number 20. The Al Kain, Tzoris Loma, you have to say, the Zeu Be'emet Chashash Rechok, Umiyot, when you have a small, very small concern, She'ein Motzi, it's not likely to happen. The Loi Chayshir Abon and Lahai, the rabbis are not concerned, but Al Zeh Yesh Lismok Mishom Shomit Pesayin. And Rav Herschel Schefter says, what does that mean? Maybe less than 10% risk. A risk less than 10%, baby is a risk on which you can say, Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Now, actually, 10% is quite a high risk. So maybe on many things, certainly on driving a car, you will say, you know, what can I do? Shomer Pesayim Hashem, it's a small risk, we have to take that risk. So that's one approach, which is, how high is the risk? Another approach of the Binyan Siyan talks about whether it's something that is dangerous now, or potentially dangerous later. And he gives an interesting example. If you have a look here in number 22, the afa gab the cloud biadenu. We have a principle that ein lechadav or oimid mipnei pikuach nefesh. Nothing stands in the way of danger to life. The ein holchim the pikuach nefesh achar roiv. We don't follow the majority. Remember, we saw that in Yuma. Even if there might be a person and they might be alive and they might be Jewish, we do what we can to save life. Zedaska biyesh vadai sakonas nefesh lefanim. That's when we have a present risk. Kagoyin benafal, benafal alav hagal, like someone who has a building fall on them. Then we're worried about even the tiniest minority. Aval b'shasa, but if at the time, ein kam pikuach nefesh, rak sheyesh l'chusha sakana haba'a, but maybe there's a future danger, but then we follow the roiv, k'mo inyan isura, like we see in Isurim. We have all these principles you can bench going on, right? If you come back from a journey over the seas, over the desert. So who says you can even go on a journey? You're benching Goimel. Baruch Hashem, it was risky and I survived. Well, if it's risky, don't go. The answer is no, because it's only potentially in the future risky. You have to thank that you were saved. It must be, he says, that these are not present risks, they're future risks. That's another approach. A third approach is, what's normal? And this is very interesting. What is normal in this world? One wonders sometimes, okay? But Rabbi Chanan Wasserman says, there is a principle based on a Gemara. The Gemara in number 23 talks about bloodletting. It says there are certain days on which you shouldn't let blood. Don't have your blood let on a Sunday, and on a Wednesday, and on a Friday. So the Gemara asks, what's wrong with Friday? So it says, Mars is dominant in the astrology, in the constellations, on a Friday. And you don't want to mess with Mars, and blood and Mars don't go together, so don't have your blood let on a Friday. So the Gemara then says, but one second, Tuesday is even worse. What's Tuesday in French? No. Mardi! It's the day of Mars! Tuesday is the day of Mars. Okay? How can you have your blood let on Tuesday? Why people... And the Gemara answers, I don't know, you're right, but people do that and they seem to be okay. Dashu Barabim. It says, Kevun the Dashu Barabim, Shalat Asayim Hashem. Meaning, anything that people normally do, Rabbi Achan Wasserman says that any normal risk in society that normal people take is called something that you can't avoid. Normal people drive cars. Normal people go shopping. Normal people go to work. All of those things involve risks. So that's called the Sayim Hashem. What's considered abnormal? So that's a good question. Can you go skydiving? Can you go bungee jumping? Can you do any of those things? Maybe it's normal now. Every grandma on their 80th birthday goes skydiving for charity. You know? My grandma, you couldn't get her into a plane. Never mind jumping out of one. Okay? But what's normal? That normal clearly changes based on different societal norms. The very concept of that. So that's one idea of Shemit Hasan Hashem. On that basis, very clearly, is vaccination a normal risk that most people take? Yes. Is vaccination a small risk? Clearly. So hopefully you're getting a feel now that vaccination itself should be included in Shemit Hasan Hashem. Other people, I'm just going over to page 7, and then we'll draw it to a close. Here there's a Shalom Shuva Shem Aryeh from the 19th century, who talks about the fact that it depends on whether there's a gain. Meaning you have to always weigh risk against gain. If the gain is significant, it's worth taking more of a risk. We all know that. And therefore he says, of course you can go on long journeys for business. But can you go on long journeys for tourism? I'm not sure. This is in the 1880s. Now, the world has changed. The risks are smaller, although tourism still has risks. But even for work, why don't you just say to the guy, well, get a job closer to home. Why do you have to go traveling across the desert to go to work? You know, earn less money and you'll be safer. And the answer is, no, that's called a need. You still need to do that. And obviously what people need is itself a question. And then there's a question of who is a fool. I'll leave you to think about that afterwards. But Shemit Hasayim Hashem, the Truma Sadeshin says, not everyone should be quick to say, I'm a fool, Shemit Hasayim Hashem. Maybe you're not a fool. Maybe you can't fall into that category because you have to hold yourself to a higher standard. So hopefully what we'll just let's sum up, and I'm actually going to do the last two sources next time because they feed very well into the next year. But what have we seen so far? This is important groundwork. We've seen so far that there is a mitzvah on many levels to protect yourself against danger. A Torah mitzvah with imminent danger. A rabbinic mitzvah with common dangers. And a general hanhagat tovah with anything that in the long term could be dangerous, even though we say shomer pesayim Hashem. And shomer pesayim Hashem applies to the last category, number 3, not to 1 and 2. And there are ways of defining shomer pesayim Hashem. Is it low risk? Is it later risk? Is it normal risk? Is it worthwhile risk? These are all categories that need to be defined. Now, what we're going to do next time, please God, is we're going to, first of all, apply all of this to vaccinations. We're going to look at the questions of the risks and how we weigh the medical opinion, whether we have a responsibility to our children, are we allowed to not vaccinate them, and whether schools can exclude them, how does the law of the land apply here, what about Chilul Hashem, when now the only place that the word Chavrusa is referred to in, I think, the British Medical Journal in the entire history is in the mumps outbreak, which broke out a few years ago, which was spread between Chavrusas in yeshivas because they were in close contact with each other. Now, is that a big Kiddush Hashem or is that not such a big Kiddush Hashem that the only mention of Chavrusa is because the Jews have spread disease in the world? That's a consideration, okay? And we're going to look at that next time in Itz Hashem. And then, of course, the question is, should you listen to your rabbi or should you not listen to your rabbi if he tells you not to vaccinate your children? All of that coming, please God, next week. So remember what we said this week and we'll move on next week. Oh, excuse me, very important announcement. I forgot to announce, this is very important. The shiur is actually sponsored. It's important I announce this, kindly sponsored in memory of Rochel Bat Zev Tzvi by an anonymous sponsor on her yahrzeit on the 16th of Iyar. We thank the anonymous sponsor for their sponsorship and encourage anyone else who wants to sponsor to please be in touch with the area. Thank you very much.
Two questions. One, I don't know, I came late.